Delaware State of the Arts. My name is Terrence Van, and I am joined today by a legendary performer. I have Tahira of Tahira Productions. She's a, renowned singer, storyteller, and all around an incredible artist. So Tahira, if you could give us an intro, give us a little backstory about what you do, maybe how you got started, and then we can go from there.
Sounds good. I'm glad to be here with you, Terrence. So what I do, yes, so you described it well. I blend music and song and storytelling, which is really in keeping with the African diaspora tradition of oral storytelling. So I say African diaspora, meaning whether you find the tradition of storytelling on the continent or in America or in the Caribbean, that it is our experience in our diaspora that storytelling is used not separate and apart from other art forms. So there's music, there's call and response. It's an interactive thing, Black folks can't even go to the movies without talking back. So, So it's very, very interactive. And I'm a songwriter and a musician as well. And how I got started is really kind of fascinating because, looking back, and you probably have this experience as an artist, you can see the threads along the way and how you got there. But at the moment, there's certain milestones in your life, you didn't know where you end up. That makes sense.
Absolutely.
So the threads, the milestones were like growing up in a family where in the home, it was 3-4 generations of family, in a home. And my father was very culturally conscious. And he was a Black nationalist. He was in the movement with Malcolm and all of that. And so he raised culturally conscious children. Right. And so in a day with my dad is like a day where he's like, all right, I need you to read the following poems by Pauline Dunbar. And then I want to hear him back in a week. I want you to dissect like a Langston Hughes poem and write something on it. I mean, that's just like a Tuesday.
Wow.
It's just a Tuesday. So that's it. And then my mother was the kind of moms, my parents had 7 children. You can do anything. You can do anything. So when I started showing interest in singing in 3rd grade, she was like, yes, yes, you can do it. You can do it. You can do it. So that's in my early beginnings. But in terms of like professionally, it didn't happen until my daughter was about a year old. She's 30 now. She's about a year old. I know, right?
Congratulations.
Right? And we were at the Philadelphia Please Touch Museum, and we saw this professional storyteller. I didn't know at the time that's what it was called, but she was doing a Kwanzaa program, explaining the concepts of Kwanzaa using storytelling and song. And this is something I had done myself in high school as a president of the Black Student Union. And I had done with my father when he would travel around the schools and community events talking about his travels to Africa and the Caribbean and talking about the culture. He was a person that brought out films, reel-to-reel films, and talked about and consciously taught. And I grew up in that, right? So I did that in high school myself. So I saw this professional storyteller, Charlotte Blake Alston, at the Philadelphia Peace Touch Museum. And she was doing what was just naturally a part of my life. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yo, what? How is it that she's at this museum? So after it was over, I went over to her and she said she was professional and she got paid. I was like, wait, hold up. Wait. What is this thing? You know what I'm saying? So we got to chat and she said that just within that year, there was a local organization called Keepers of the Culture. And it was an affiliate of the National Association of Black Storytellers. I'm like, wait a minute. You ain't the only one out here doing this. Wait, there's a local, organization and a national. And within weeks of that, I joined Keepers of the Culture in Philadelphia. Within months of that, I joined the National Association of Black Storytellers. And within a year of that meeting, I quit my corporate job and became a full-time storyteller. And that was nearly 30 years ago and haven't turned back since.
Wow. Now that is a story. That is a story that can inspire folks, because I think especially in the creative arena, there's all these zigs and zags. And, like you said, you never really know where this point will take you, you know, to there. But there's so much in that story that I think, you know, the listeners will can take away from in their journey. And, you know, especially, you know, as a young Black woman, I'm sure it takes that ambition to be able to open that path up. So and here we are 30 years now, you know, we're in the present now. And when I was speaking to you a few weeks ago, you were in Utah. So this is coming from the East Coast, and now you're kind of all over. So how has that experience been? And could you share, you know, some of the details of that?
Sure. Yeah, I've done national programming, and I've even done international travel with my work. And that international travel was supported by the Delaware Division of the Arts, and it made it possible. It was really powerful. Yes. So, but nationally, like the other day, a week or so ago, I was in Utah. There's a storytelling festival there. So there are storytelling festivals around the world. And this one was called a Story Crossroads, a festival and summit in Salt Lake City, Utah. And so I was there. I was there from like a Sunday to a Wednesday. I did a keynote address talking about the tradition of storytelling and the African American experience and African diaspora experience. And on that panel, there were people, professors talking about storytelling in Jewish tradition, storytelling in Islamic tradition. And then there was one professor talking about storytelling in the American Sign Language tradition. It was powerful, yes. You know, and to sit on that panel. So that was like one type of, so that was a keynote address. Then I went to a children's hospital and told stories to the children's hospital. Right after that, they, you know, I had a driver, they took me to a youth detention center. And I told stories to an all male presenting youth detention center audience. And then the next day we was in a park and we had family storytelling in the daytime. There was a elementary school right next door and they walked over. Then that evening we had adult storytelling. So that's like how a festival can be made up. It's like you go in and you're doing community outreach. There's a scholarship part of it, like the keynote part of it. There is a family component, you know, part of it. And it's all to that we because we understand how stories can touch lives, how stories can also enter us into difficult conversations, right? Mm. So we had a deaf person at that keynote, a Muslim, a Jewish person, and I'm Muslim, there was a Christian person. And we were talking about storytelling in our tradition. So although we were from these very diverse and sometimes separate communities, we had this overlap, we had this thread through. Right? Mm. Thread through. So that's like an example of like what a national programming is set up to be. And these festivals take me all over the country. And then just at word of mouth, growing in my reputation, folks, then I'll do, a keynote at a conference. That may be a conference of like social workers or a conference of people speaking about social justice. You know, everywhere, because even what you do as a visual artist, you're telling stories.
Absolutely. I tell folks that all the time that, you know, art, whether all around, full circle, it is telling a story. Even if it's an abstract piece, it's evoking a feeling to wonder more, what is going on there. So storytelling, I think, is one of the most powerful things we can do, you know, as human beings. So it's awesome to hear, you know, that you're being brought around the country and world also to tell African stories, yeah. You know, so that's so important. And it's inspirational for me because I think a lot of people need to hear those stories. There's so much wisdom and they're remarkable. So could you share some of that?
You know, that's a great question about like how we connect when we come from such diverse backgrounds. And I think first we connect through emotion, right? So you just said even an abstract piece is going to evoke certain feelings and emotions, right? And we as human, that's what connects us, no matter what language you speak, no matter what culture. So if I'm telling a story, and in that story, there's conflict around self-identity, but there's conflict around people who are at odds with each other because they're from different backgrounds. Or there's conflict around a person who has internal turmoil because they have self-doubt and self-deprecation. It don't matter where that story comes from. Those themes, those truths connect to everybody, absolutely everybody. And so, and that is the connection. And sometimes, you know, I may sing a song in a different language, or, you know, I have my African-American vernacular, you know, and I do my thing and I don't, you know, do no code switching or anything like that. And then I'll do some explanations, you know, through it. And then sometimes I don't. And sometimes it hits people differently. Like, you know, when I was in Utah, there was an elder there, Charlotte Starks, who we have an affiliate. The National Association of Black Storytellers has an affiliate in Salt Lake City. But certain things I said, she would laugh like really loud, really big. And everybody's like, you know, and then primarily Caucasian audience is like, what? We didn't get that. What was funny? You know, it's like some things going to hit. And some things, you know, some things are going missing. And yay, you know, just, you know, keep it going. You know what I mean? It could be just a little thing. A line from a story I said, it's hard to imagine in 2023 this moment, but imagine, close your eyes, that way back, children played, get ready for it. Children played outside.
Right. I love that. Right?
Outside.
It's so true though.
Right? And so everybody laughed, all the adults laughed, and then the children in the audience, they were kind of like, well, wait a minute. Well, we kind of play outside. I was like, no. You don't understand. We played until we were dirty. We played, you know, we had special clothes assigned to playing outside, you know. And I would go, and then they would get so excited, and I would name games. And then they were like, wait, but we know hopscotch. Wait, we know this. So now they want to be a part of this joke, right? Mm. So they're like, no, we play this and we play this. And then as I'm going through the games we played outside, I said, and the time to come home was when, and of course the black people said, when the lights came on outside, you know?
That's right.
In the mountains of Utah, some of them were like, what do you mean the lights come on outside? What are you talking about? You know, because we talk about an urban setting for that kind of story, right? So it hits everybody differently, but everybody can catch on to the humor or catch on to that community thing that's in there or catch on to that familiar thing about having a big sister and wanting to do this with her and her shutting you out. Like children, grandparents, you know, everybody in between can get some part of that story and go, hey, I know that feeling. I know that.
Mm, absolutely. And those children out in Utah, they're blessed to receive some of that. You know, they're blessed to receive some. So that's wonderful to hear. And I love how you broke that down too, the timing and just knowing your crowd. And that actually leads into the next question because you know, when describing it like that, that sounds like a master description. That sounds like somebody who's a master of their craft. And you have been recognized as being a master of your craft this year, winning the Master of Fellowship. How's that been? Congratulations, first of all. That's huge. But to be recognized as a master of your craft, inspiring people all over the world, how does that feel to get to that point?
I feel so honored, and I feel it is a incredible responsibility to step into that, you know, and I don't take for granted either one of those, that position of honor or that position of responsibility. And I think there it is twofold. It's honorable to be recognized by my own state, because so often, to be honest, I say 85% of my work is done outside of the state of Delaware, right? I'm traveling, doing this, you know, so. And when I won the established professional, it was in the year 2000, wow. Right? Right. And full disclosure, this was not my first time applying for masters, you know, you have to wait, I think, 5 or 7 years. And so I have applied a few times. I think this is my third time around. So those artists who are out there listening, keep trying. I tried 3 times. And the honor that it bestowed upon me and to be in this position is that to say that you have reached a pinnacle in your artistry, both in the state and in the nation, where you are representing with excellence your art form. That is honorable. And then the responsibility is, and then therefore, whenever, then as the African-American tradition, that whenever the community recognize you as something, fill in the blank, right, then you must carry that wherever you go.
That's so true. That is so true.
And you have responsibilities for those behind you and those who came before you, you know. And I'm always very cognizant of that dual thing of like, it's a good thing. Woo, I got a load to carry, you know, at both of those things. In fact, that's why I capitalize all the letters of my name legally. You know, all T-A-H-I-R-A, all capital letters. My first name, my last name are the same legally. And I do that is to remind myself of the big responsibility that I have.
Mm.
It's not about you. It's huge. Never forget it. Never forget on the giant shoulders on which you stand. Never forget it. And this adds one more level of that, receiving this Master Fellowship in the oral literature category. It is an awesome responsibility that I don't take lightly.
That is a perfect answer. it is, because a lot of folks, they see the awards, they see things, but they don't realize what you just said, the work that it takes to get there, to maintain, and then to also, you know, keep yourself engaged. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, it took three times. So, you know, if you would have stopped at that second time, you know, we wouldn't be talking about the Master Fellowship right now. So that is awesome to hear. And I know that will connect and resonate with our listeners, because what they say, the third time's the charm. You know, they say the third time's the charm, but, you know, the perseverance that it takes to become a master is somewhat unseen, I feel. As a master, you've worked in different arenas, but I know you do a lot of work with kids. You kind of spoke a little bit earlier, but I know you really focus a lot on the youth. And how has that, you know, work kind of transformed what you do? But I'm sure it's been very rewarding also.
Oh, yeah. The babies. Oh, my goodness. I still get hyped.
Yes.
I still get really hyped, like really hyped. And the babies feed my soul. And when I started out, I started telling stories. Whatever age my daughter was, that's the age of children I was good with. I had the testing at home, you know, having to be, let's see if this is going to work in the real world. I always used to, you know, test drive things, you know, with her. Of course, now she's a full grown adult, so I can't. But I still get this pleasure from performing and working with children, because I'm a teaching artist too. I do teach storytelling to children in workshops and residencies in schools across the country. And the thing I love about working with children, they have no filter. You will know immediately how you're doing. So with young audiences, they let you know what's the deal is. You know what's working right in the moment. You're like, ooh, this ain't here. Okay. All right. Wait, I got to do something else. Like, yo. And that's what I love about them. It, you know right away what's hitting and what's not, you know. And I never underestimate them. You know, I'll ask them questions. I weave my questions in my performance. And I'm always like, wow, I didn't expect that from a second grader. You know what I mean? Like, just
right. To bring us home, to kind of close out here, you have a beautiful website. Is there anything that you would like to share, you know, to kind of finish off?
So, yes, to keep up with me, you can go to Tahira Productions. So, Tahira, T-A-H-I-R-A, Productions. With the S, TahiraProductions.com. At the end of June, I'm doing a workshop series with the Delaware Art Museum about building new narratives, and it's free. You register. I'm one of the facilitators. They have three or four different facilitators. Then in July, we have the second annual. We did it for the second year, the second annual Wilmington Black Storytelling Residency that's put on by the City of Wilmington Office of Cultural Affairs with Tina Betts. And we bring in storytellers from across the country, or more than a dozen storytellers from, like, this year, I think, is going to be from 9 different states. And not only do they come to study under masters like myself, Dr. Reed and Emily Hooper-Lansana, but they get to learn the history of Black folk in Wilmington. Because, as I said, wherever we go in the country, we do our work. We're connecting with community, not just sharing our stories, but learning about what was the Black experience. What's the Black storytelling in this place, right? Mm-hmm. So when they come here, they learn about Clifford Brown. They learn about the East Side. They learn about Louis Redding. They learn about the Mundy Club. They learn about Peter Spencer. B.B. Coker, Mother B.B. Coker comes and sit, and they sit with the elders, and they learn about it. So that's happening the last week of July, and we're going to be at Christina Cultural Arts Center for most of the days, but then we're out in the community. We're going to be at the Delaware Historical Society. So I say all that to say that when we are, as Black storytellers, when we're doing our work, it's not simply for entertainment. It's not simply like, oh, this is my show, come here, do this. You know, this is an exchange. This is a cultural experience. And storytelling is our cultural armor. It's how for centuries we have protected ourselves. We have healed ourselves. We have encouraged ourselves. We have built dynasties around all through our power to be authentic in our story and to pass our story on from one generation to another.
Wow. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. That's beautiful and so true. For anyone listening, please go to the website. You know, if there's a school, if there's a school out and, I don't know who may be hearing this. Please, let's get more of these stories out there. Call to here right now. And you're going to get hear some really awesome things. So this has been an awesome session and I've learned a lot. Our listeners will learn a lot. It's been a blessing to have you with us sharing your story. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, brother.
You're about to rock a show right now. So to hear, thank you. And I hope you have a wonderful day today.
You too. Blessings.